Hello, my name is Charles Lincoln. I am speaking to you from New Orleans, Louisiana, and this is Deo Vindique, the motto of the Confederate States of America in what would have been the greatest city of the Confederate States of America had that nation managed to live to maturity. And I am here to talk to you about politics and race and the economy in the year 2012. Today is December the 16th, 2012, and as most of you probably know, New Orleans is one of the most heterogeneous cities in the United States, and I came to this place exactly 1 week ago today from the absolute most heterogeneous place in the United States, which is Hawaii. And I thought I'd start off this program by saying a few words about what exactly racial heterogeneity means to the United States present and future, with some reflections on the past. By background and interests, I am almost obsessed with the past. I guess it's one reason I like New Orleans so much. A city that preserves more of the past probably than almost anywhere else in the United States. What was interesting about Hawaii, and Hawaii has been on everyone's mind, I guess, a lot over the past 4 years since the election of Barack Obama, who, you know, according to his official records, was born in Honolulu a family which in 1961 would have been, ironically enough, illegal in the state of Louisiana and about half of the other states of the United States. The reason, of course, was that they were worried about the consequences of the mixing of the races, the crossing of what up to a certain point in history was one of the most sacred taboos in any culture. And of course, New Orleans in 1961 was a very strongly segregated city, a city that more than any city perhaps except Richmond, Virginia, preserved the memory of the Confederate States of America by housing, among other things, Confederate Memorial Hall, over by Lee Circle, which is right now still in existence, but in somewhat of a controversial state, being the subject of a great deal of controversy because New Orleans is, at this stage, a city that has largely crossed racial boundaries, and, you know, oddly enough, I think that there's still probably more of a stigma against interracial marriage in New Orleans than, say, in Los Angeles, where it seems that interracial marriage is almost a preference. At least interracial dating seems to be a preference. You see a lot of interracial couples over on the west side of Los Angeles, where I've been living for the past 2 years. And all of this is interesting because it reflects the collapse of a hierarchy that existed for the past 200 years, and up to a point, it at least had something to do with the fact that America was a great country. Now, was it the cause of America's greatness, or was it merely a coincidence that segregation and the maintenance of racial boundaries were maintained throughout American histories until very recently? Hawaii is a good place to explore that problem, I think, and it's very symbolic because, of course, Barack Obama claims to be from there. There's substantial doubt that he actually is from there, but that's the subject of a different talk. In Hawaii today, unlike anywhere else in the United States, there is not only a non-white majority, which exists here in New Orleans, It exists, in the state of California statewide, and arguably in Texas and a couple of other states also, although the counts aren't quite as exact. But in Hawaii, not only do you have a non-white majority, but you have the non-white majority clearly at the top of the social and political scale in certain senses. Now, this is something I did not realize until I went to Hawaii several weeks ago for purposes that had only to do with the mortgage economy. I was not there for the purpose of investigating the question of race, but the question of race immediately came up. And it came up in the following ways. In Hawaii, the old American order is literally turned upside down. In Hawaii, the non-whites are the permanent residents. They look on the whites as the migrant, temporary residents, and they severe they the non-whites control the courts and the local business, I guess you'd say, the local business environment, and they discriminate to the extent that they can get by with against white people. This starts out off with the way it, you would expect it to. It starts off with name calling and just sort of kidding around and joking. But the name that they give for white people in Hawaii is haoles. There are several meanings of this word haole. One of them, of course, is the joke in English that, white people are always complaining. They're always howling about something or other. But the etymology of the term is something different. It refers to a word in ancient Hawaiian, Haole, haole, which means breathless. And that again has multiple meanings. It means that, whites are out of shape. They're always, puffing along the street, I guess, especially older guys, unfortunately, like me. And the other aspect is that whites behave differently when they meet you. The ancient Hawaiians, apparently, like Arabs and many people around the world, when they first meet someone, they like to literally get in their face. The custom is, nose to nose as one man speaks to another, is actually a line from the book of Exodus in the Bible, 33:11, where Moses actually up on Mount Sinai, you meet with God, nose to nose as one man speaks to another. But white people don't do that. They don't meet nose to nose, and they don't consider that the normal form of greeting. But this is a racial pejorative term that the Hawaiians use. And although that word haole is an ancient Hawaiian word, is a lot, and although a lot of the dialectical words that are special to Hawaii specifically derive from the ancient Hawaiian Polynesian language, there are very few people who even speak, can make a complete sentence in ancient Hawaiian. There are probably a few thousand people in the entire state of Hawaii who can still speak the Polynesian Hawaiian language. And when we talk about the non-white natives of Hawaii, what we're really talking about is the people who were brought in, basically, to replace and supplement the ancient Hawaiians in the 19th and 20th centuries. And most of these are the largest single group is probably Filipino, Japanese, Chinese, Korean, Thai. And the court personnel tend to be largely Japanese and Chinese. The business community tends to be largely Japanese and Chinese and Filipino. And oddly enough, the landholders, the people who own the majority of the land, that's where you find a few people who can claim actual descent from ancient Hawaiians. And they are also the only people who provide a significant amount of white admixture in the, I guess you'd call it the ruling elite of Hawaii. And they also have mostly white names. And what the pattern in Hawaii seems to be is that the original white arrivals there, the only white people who stayed typically, were not the sailors, not the whalers, not the merchant seamen, but the missionaries. And so on the island of Oahu, for instance, you have the Bishop family, which was the original missionary family. And on the island of Maui, you have the Alexander and Baldwin families, and particularly the Baldwin family. A and B is the largest landholder on the island of Maui. They are at the absolute top of the social and economic and the political scale in Maui, and they are mixed race, Hawaiians and Hawaiians with some Japanese and white, and they keep the white name, and that in itself is kind of interesting. They preserve the Anglo-Irish name Baldwin for the purpose of, well, for all purposes really. And you go down to Lahaina, which is one of the historic communities and now one of the basically tourist boardwalks in at the western end of the island, and the name Baldwin is absolutely everywhere. The oldest standing western style house in Hawaii is in Maui rather, is the Baldwin House, and they were the missionaries, and now they are sugar plantation owners, and the entire economy of the island of Maui is built around the plantation exploitation that you have of one group of people by another. And of course, that brings me full circle to one of the reasons why I find the comparison between Hawaii and New Orleans and the American South generally so interesting. It seems that whenever you've got an encounter between the peoples, an encounter between peoples of different race, different ethnic groups, there is always going to be a dominant and subdominant group. And so even in a situation where the colonialization takes a very long historical scale, as in Hawaii or in Mexico, for instance, that pattern remains very fixed, that you get the white group forming the nucleus of an elite. And what we have in Hawaii is this fascinating circumstance where the original white elite, the Baldwins, the Alexanders, and the Bishops, have formed this curious alliance with the non-white majority. And they have basically convinced the non-white majority that the colonial regime that they represent, that the Baldwins and Bishops and Alexanders represent, they have convinced the locals that they need to cast their lot with the plantation system instead of with the Americans. Now, the Americans, of course, by and large, are people like my client that I went over to see there in Hawaii. They are people who were born on the mainland, but came at a relatively younger or older age to to the island of islands of either Oahu or Maui or the Big Island, any of the smaller islands, Kauai. They came over basically for purposes of vacation or retirement or to be part of the vacation retirement industry. And as the white population has aged in the United States, that has become a bigger and bigger and bigger industry. Now, the tension that exists right now is that big corporate interests are interested in large populations, that will work and consume products. The large population on Hawaii is the non-white resident population of this Filipino, Japanese, and Chinese mix with a little bit of Hawaiian and white admixture, basically focusing on the landholders because one reason that land ownership is such a key racial issue here is that the Hawaiians basically didn't want to give up any part of their island. And so, for example, in Oahu, the only way the Bishop family ever got any land at all was by intermarrying with the royal family of Hawaii, and that produced the monopoly on land ownership in the island of Oahu, that has created a situation where everyone has to lease from the Bishop family, the Bishop Corporation. You don't quite have that situation on Maui, but what you have is a situation where about two-thirds of the island is owned by Alexander Baldwin Corporation, and the rest is held in very, very small parcels of land, such as my client uses, for basically tourism and short-term residential vacation and retirement purposes. And what's going on in Hawaii right now, and what's been going on for about 20 years, is that the local elite, the non-white elite, is doing everything in its power to make sure that they maintain power and ownership forever against the white, the mainland majority, or what at least we traditionally consider the mainland majority of white people. And they have gone to extraordinary lengths to use the courts and the regulatory system of the county of Maui and the county of Oahu to make sure that the migrant whites, remember in the US we think about the migrant workers, and I guess in essence in Hawaii you have the being this feared group, the white migrant vacation and retirement people, they have a lot of money and they could acquire a great deal of property and a great deal of power if it weren't for this local establishment. And the local establishment basically has instituted a series of regulations and oppressive policies that serves two purposes. It effectively limits the ability of the migrant white population to get a foothold in Maui. It prevents them from making their the maximum economic value use of their property. It operates in a way that effectively uses regulation to abolish most of the elements of what you would consider the bundle of rights in private property. And it forces these people who have bought these properties, the one-third to one-quarter of the island that's not owned by the large corporate interests. It has been coincidentally forcing them into foreclosure in record numbers because they cannot comply with all the regulatory requirements that are being imposed on them. This is how I came in. I came in because the client on the southwest side of the island of Hawaii is in a foreclosure situation, and she needed help resisting this foreclosure. But it's so far from the typical situation we find on the mainland, it's not even funny. She is not a homeowner who got in over her head and couldn't pay because she overestimated her income unrelated to the house. She is a co-owner with her brother back in Minnesota, another haole, obviously, of a business that basically could and should be a multi-million dollar vacation rental business. They have a villa and a series of outlying houses on a hillside overlooking Maui, the southwest coast of Maui, which is simply one of the most beautiful garden spots I have ever seen in my life. It's a villa comparable to anything you might imagine on the Riviera of France or Italy or the Mediterranean coast of Spain. Spectacular architecture, spectacular fountains and gardens, total luxury place, and aimed at basically the highest of high-end vacationers who would ever come to Maui for their main bedroom, I don't know what you'd call it, for their main property setup. They can charge $1,200 a night for their largest suites, and they have a whole bunch of smaller what are called ohanas. Again, that's Hawaiian grandmother houses, and smaller rooms that are basically independent units. This should be an extremely profitable business, but the corporate interest of the Baldwin family and the popular politics of the non-white majority is to prevent the whites from using Hawaii in this way. And this becomes very interesting in yet another way, which is that the whites, these migrant whites from the stateside, they are very interested in preserving the natural beauty and ecology of Hawaii. They are very interested in preserving the whales. They're very interested in preserving the sea life generally, the ecological diversity. They are all members of the Sierra Club. And the point is that whites have this very romantic notion of the beauty and majesty of Hawaii, these islands out in the middle of the Pacific, and they are absolutely fanatic about wanting to preserve all this. And so an example of the kind of fights that the whites have with the non-whites is a plan for a super ferry between the islands, basically, that the corporate interests wanted to promote. And they wanted specifically to have a super ferry that would go, very, very fast. I forget the details of it. But it would connect the islands, and you could go from Oahu to Maui in just a little over an hour or something. And this ferry was going to have some sort of device on the front that would literally push anything in its way out of its way. And this device was basically like, it really what it amounted to was a whale slicing machine. And the the white migrants, the tourist industry, fought, not the tourist industry, the individuals basically fought this vigorously because what they want is to preserve Hawaii as a refuge and as a resource, an environmental refuge and resource. And the idea of this super ferry going between the islands, slicing whales as they go, is a terrible thing. Just recently, it's been on the news. I don't know if you saw it, but there was a whale washed up on Malibu in Southern California. Its back had been broken because a boat ran over it, and boats and whales don't go together, especially high-speed boats. And so you've got this interesting situation where the non-white population is taking a strong anti-environment, anti-conservation point, so that you can have more corporate development and more corporate jobs. And of course, they don't want any tourists with large private. They won't don't want any howlies, any white people with large private estates that don't employ a large number of locals. And so they're only willing to have tourism in big hotels, big corporate conglomerates, such as, Hilton or Sheraton or Four Seasons, whatever. This is the conflict then. And you've got a non-white population that supports the large corporations against basically small property owning middle class white Americans. And all of a sudden, we've got Hawaii being a macrocosm of the world. And I find that very interesting. Hawaii is a place where corporate interests find an alliance with non-whites who want basically low-level jobs, lots of them, large populations to be supported by, basically the availability of cheap labor, and then whites who are trying to promote a higher standard of living, a higher standard of ecology, and the non-whites using their majority status to prevent that from happening. Does that not sound like a microcosm of the world? Is that not on these very small islands in Obama's home exactly what's going on in the nation and the world as a whole? The whites of the world who had created this high level of wealth and this high level of civilization now have the leisure, some of them do anyhow, to worry about things like quality of life and quality of the economy and the atmosphere that they live in, and they want to upgrade that. And this is where the environmental movement of the 60s came in. Basically, it was a product of wealth. And the interesting thing is that the developing world does not want that. They want to see the last remnants of the rainforest and indigenous woods all consumed in Hawaii. They couldn't care less about the whales. They couldn't care less about the dolphins and the sea lions, and things like Hawaiian bats, the only mammal that was present on the islands of Hawaii before the humans arrived were apparently these very rare Hawaiian bats. And so you've got the corporations in alliance with a so-called democratic majority of white people. Of non-white people, rather, who want to underdevelop Hawaii and basically are happy to see corporations like Monsanto and EI DuPont, having gigantic GMO tracts of genetically modified crops being produced on Maui. Monsanto is the largest leaseholder for Alexander and Baldwin's land on Maui, which is kind of interesting. And they have gigantic experimental plots of GMO crops growing on Maui. And the locals love this, and the Haole whites hate it. And who is winning? The whites clearly have some majority support on the mainland, but the mainland isn't aware of the situation on the islands. And the Haole whites are a distinct minority in Hawaii itself. And this very homogenized group of non-whites, Filipinos, Japanese and Chinese, with a few native Polynesian and Tongans, Melanesians mixed in, they are against all these sort of value-oriented projects, and they have the political and economic clout by alliance with the founding missionary corporations, which have Anglo names, but basically are not really culturally or politically white anymore, which is kind of an interesting concept in itself. This alliance is basically degrading the standard of living on Hawaii, degrading the economy, and abolishing the notions of private property and individual control over land on the islands. So I hope you're getting an interesting picture here. I hope that, if you've stayed with me this far, you've got a picture of Hawaii as a place where old money names like the Alexander Baldwins own the land and the bishops on Oahu. They own the land, they control the politics by giving large numbers of jobs to racially mixed, culturally indistinct population of workers. And the main distinction is between this homogenized culturally heterogeneous heritage of non-whites against the whites who want ecological preservation through their joint actions to preserve the environment and the endangered species and even the cultural resources. I happen to have a personal, very strong interest in archaeology, and I'm amazed at how few archaeological sites are developed on Hawaii, in part because things like archaeology just get in the way of development for Monsanto and the big hotels, and apparently they aren't really major tourist attractions. So the idea of preserving the cultural heritage, even of the indigenous Hawaiians, is an unpopular idea, and it's an unprofitable idea. And it's one of those ideas that pit the white migrant population against their non-white hosts. And this is really the microcosm of the world. It is essentially what you see happening all over the United States, all over Latin America, and even in Europe, where they are bringing in they are bringing in cheap labor at every chance they get, which is at this stage basically of the non-white population. They're bringing in cheap labor for the purpose of diluting and obliterating the traditional white interests. And I cannot think of a more appropriate metaphor for what the culture that gave rise to Barack Obama. He is trying to make sure that private property surrenders to corporate interests in America. He wants to make sure that basically everyone has a low standard of living by virtue of either welfare or welfare-like jobs, things like working on big corporate farms at Monsanto or at large hotels. These are jobs that do not empower people. These are jobs that empower only the corporate entities that provide them. People like the white immigrants to Maui who are trying to make large, tiny estates, large, really free enterprise population low density isolates. They are really at a political disadvantage. And in Hawaii, I have no idea exactly what the solution is going to be because you've got this strong non-white majority that is interested in alliance with the corporate world. And, what would it take to alter the situation in Hawaii so that individuals, small families, could make the largest economic profit possible out of the use of private property? Or do we want to go to a world where the only way that you can enjoy Hawaii is through staying in 20-story hotels that employ thousands of people and provide thousands of jobs? This is ultimately the choice that the whole world is facing. Do we want a world run by individuals or by corporations? If we're going to have a world that preserves the rights of individuals, we're going to have to start dismantling the overweening power of the corporate political control over the lower income of mass workers. And that is the challenge that people who would like to see a higher quality of life and a higher standard of living in the United States are going to have to start facing. The corporate interests are allied with socialism. The interests of the middle class can only be preserved through maintenance of individual and family control over private property, which can only be maintained in an atmosphere where governmental regulation is not the way to preserve the environment. Only popular action was going to save the whales from the super ferry in Hawaii. Only individual concerted action is going to break up Monsanto and control over GMOs and GMO genetically modified organism production in general. And so political action has to be aimed at breaking up the corporate governmental alliance. And that, I think, is our biggest lesson from Hawaii, that individualism and individual property are the only guarantors that we have. And until we start working to take over political entities, even at the county level, and making sure that individual rights are respected more than the power to arbitrarily and capriciously impose regulations which destroy that value, and maximize power only of the corporate, entities, that is the trajectory we need to be on. Up with this, and this, unfortunately, I think is also going to involve people becoming a little bit more conscious of the cultural and value differences between the races. Because in Hawaii, more than anywhere else, it is very clearly a divide along racial lines, and the values just happen to coincide in this case very strongly between economic maximization for the maximum number of people on the non-white side, and economic maximization for the individual on the white side. And until we can start dealing with this in a way that will be politically effective, I think that the big corporations are well on their way to wiping out individual initiative and individual private property, both in Hawaii and in the United States generally. And that is the problem facing Hawaii, Louisiana, California, and everywhere else. And this is the kind of subject that I address and that I intend to continue addressing. Charles Lincoln, Deo Vindice, New Orleans, Louisiana.